Okay, we're holding Maseches Brachos, Perek Ches Mishnah Base. That's 8-2. This is hands down the most difficult Mishnah in the Masechta. If you're familiar with the rules, halachas of Tuma and Tahara, then you're going to get it. And if not, then we'll give it our best shot. And if not, don't feel bad. You will get it the second time through Shas. It bedeviled me for years, but Be'ez Hashem, we will try our best not to make it clear. Here is the issue. The parak continues on now, discussing machloks and disagreements between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai regarding the halachas of seuda of meals. This particular one is talking about the wine, the cup of wine one might drink at the beginning of a meal. So let's call it kiddush. Friday night, you make kiddush. After you make kiddush, you're going to wash, knead bread. That's how we do it. The question is, in fact, whether you should wash your hands to eat the bread before or after making kiddush. Now, everyone's going to agree, meaning Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai both agree, that one must wash his or her hands prior to eating bread. That's not the topic of discussion. The explicit topic of discussion is simply what should happen first. Should the hand washing occur before or after kiddush, the hand washing one must do in order to eat the bread? Now, to really understand the Mishnah and to come back to what it's talking about, you need some background. So, the very long story, very short, is that there are various sources of tuma, ritual impurity, let's translate it that as, in the Torah. And something that is tame, has tuma, can transmit that tuma status. So there are a variety of different sources of tuma in my schematic that I use in other Mishnayos. I say there are 13 different sources of tuma in the Torah. I'll outline that another time. What is important is that tuma, a tame item, let's say, for argument's sake, a dead rat. So a dead rat is a sheretz, one of the sources of tumah in the Torah. It's called an av ha-tumah, av meaning a parent, a source of tumah. And if a dead rat comes into physical contact with something, so it can transmit that tumah status. Meaning, if a person touches a dead rat, that person will become what's called a rishon la-tumah, a first-degree removed tame person. So the dead rat, the sheretz, is the av, the source of the tuma, and the recipient of tuma, in this case, is the person who touched the dead rat. He is a rishon, a one step removed from the source of tuma. A rishon the tuma. Now, there are four different categories of recipients of tuma. Adam, people, kalim, utensils. Some utensils are susceptible. There's a Maseches Kalim, which is 30 prakim long, 30 chapters worth of defining what can and can't become tummy in terms of utensils, but those that are, let's say, a metal cup, for argument's sake, or a fork. So that's Adam and Kalim, the first two. The third is Ochlin, food stuffs, can become tummy under the right circumstances. And finally, Mashkin, drinks, liquids. There is a Machlokas Rishonim, what falls in the category of Mashkin. For now, let's just keep it simple and call it a cup of wine. More another time. So that means if a dead rat would touch a person, the dead rat is the av, the source of tuma. The person who receives it is a rishon l'tuma. Similarly, if a dead rat would touch a metal cup or a fork, that metal cup or fork would become a rishon l'tuma. An adam and a kli only can receive tuma from an av hatuma midoraisa. According to the Torah law, if a person touches the sheretz, he's a rishon l'tuma, the dead sheretz. But if, let's say, for example, a dead rat touches the man is the rishon. If the man now touches his metal cup or metal fork, the metal cup or fork remains tahor. There's no tumah to it at all because a kli, a utensil, can't receive tumah from a rishon, only from an av, only from an original source of tumah. That's true for adam and kalim, people and utensils. However, ochlin and mashkin, food and drinks, they can receive tuma from a rishon, which would mean that if the man who is a rishon touched the fork remains tahor. But if the man who is a rishon touches a piece of steak, then that steak would become a sheni, a second degree tummy item. Okay, if that steak would then touch a liquid, meaning that sheni, second degree tummy steak would touch some wine, according to the Torah law, the wine remains tahor because regular foodstuffs called chulin, meaning we're not talking about truma, the Kohen's portions, nor kudshim, sacrificial portions. Those are not a discussion right now at all, but regular food, unsanctified food, can't become more removed than a sheni, a second degree from tumah. And therefore, if the steak, which is a sheni, touches the wine stays totally tahor. If the man who was a rishon sticks his finger in the wine similarly becomes a sheni latuma, a secondary tumah status. Fine, that's how tumah transfers in its simplest description according to the Torah. Now, there are three rabbinic enactments regarding tumah that are pervasive throughout the Mishnayos, and they come up again and again and again. So much so that they need to be mentioned when everyone gives an outline of the halachas of tumah and tahara. I equate it to something similar to the way muktza overhauls the laws of Shabbos, right? Muktza is just a derabbanan, but Shabbos is totally different once you introduce muktza into the framework, because it's so pervasive and affects so much of the way when it relates to Shabbos. So there are these three derabbanans that crop up all over the place and really kind of wreak havoc, making the rules of tumah and tahara and it's spreading much more complicated. The first is that midrabbanan, a liquid that becomes tameh, is a rishon l'tumah. So that means, in the example I gave before, the dead rat is the av. The man who touched the dead rat, he's the rishon. The man who touched the dead rat, who sticks his finger into the wine, would make the wine into a sheni. That's the Torah law. But midrabbanan, that wine is promoted to being a rishon l'tumah. And that's true whether the wine in the cup, or the water in the cup, etc., touched an av, the dead rat itself, that would make the wine into a rishon. Or if the wine touched the man who touched the rat, meaning the man was a rishon, the wine, which would be a sheni midoraisa, is promoted to being a rishon midorabanan, a first degree, rabbinically. Or even if the thing that touched the wine was already a sheni. So that means the dead rat, which is the av, touches the man, who is the rishon, who touches the steak, making the steak into a sheni. If that sheni touches the wine is promoted to being a rishon, a first-degree removed tumah item, midrabban. The second rabbinic enactment is that a tumah liquid can, rabbinically speaking, can render a kli, a utensil, to betameh. That is to say, I said midoraisa, according to Torah law, the only way a person or a utensil can become tameh is if it touches an av hatumah, an original source of tumah. However, rabbinically we're saying that a liquid that's tameh, even though it's a rishon l'tumah, and maybe only rabbinically tameh, meaning it could be midoraisa totally tahor, but rabbinically it's tameh as a rishon, if that rishon liquid, wine for argument's sake, touches a cup, the cup will become tameh also. The cup will be a sheni l'tumah, one step down from rishon. And an important rule for our Mishnah especially is that the rabbis set it up that if the tameh liquid touches just the outside of a cup, then only the outside becomes tameh, but the inside remains tahor. Okay, so if the wine that's tameh as a rishon touches the inside of the cup inside and out becomes tameh, the tumah pervades the entire cup. Okay, so that's the second rule. The third rule, rabbinically, is that stam yadayim, hands that are not known to be clean, are considered to be a sheni l'tumah, a second degree tamei item. Again, midoraisa, a person could never be a sheni l'tumah. There's no such thing as a person being a second degree tamei item. There was such a thing, truth is, as a tful yom, but I'm not discussing that now. And there's certainly no such thing, midoraisa from the Torah, of having a part of a person being tummy and a part of a person being tahor, but that's what we're setting up here rabbinically. This third rule says that a person who hasn't washed his hands or doesn't know his hands to be clean, they have a status, just the hands, of being a sheni l'tumah, a secondary tumah source. So again, these three rabbinic enactments that you've got to know when you're understanding not just our Mishnah, but tumah and tahara throughout the place. Number one, a liquid that becomes tameh is automatically promoted to being a rishon l'tumah, first-degree tameh item, regardless of what was metamet, whether an av, a rishon, or even a sheni. Tevul yom is excluded for whatever that's worth. Second of all, a liquid that becomes tummy, even though a tummy liquid can never render a kli, a utensil to be tummy midoraisa, midorabanan, a tummy liquid renders a kli to become a shein letuma, a second degree tummy status, and if the tummy liquid just touches the outside of the kli, only the outside of the kli is tummy, the inside of the kli remains tahor. Just as a side point again, that doesn't apply to people. So a tummy liquid that touches a person, the person remains tahor, but his hands could become tummy all over again because they became dirty. The third rabbinic enactment is that stam yadayim, hands that are not known to be clean, are automatically a shein l'tuma. Fine. Now, if you put those three rabbinic items together, you get quite a tricky situation, which is that any time that your hands, which have not been washed, touch any liquid, that liquid becomes a rishon l'tuma. And that liquid that gets mixed up in your kitchen can make whatever utensils that it touches into a sheini l'tuma tame all over again. Now, with that in mind, here is the discussion between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai in our Mishnah. What is unspoken in the Mishnah, and this is a funny thing that goes on with the next few Mishnayos, is Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, while they agree that you must wash your hands before eating bread, what they disagree on, and this is not spoken explicitly in the Mishnah at all, so you would never know this, you have no chance of knowing this without me telling you or learning the Gemara or the other Mefarshim, is that the real machlokas here between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai is not about anything I've said up to now. The machlokas is whether one is permitted to use a cup, let's say to make kiddush, where the outside of the cup is a shein l'tuma, where it's tummy. How you'd know that? You wouldn't know that. Even when you read the Mishnah, you wouldn't know that. But that is the issue. Beis Shammai say, you may not use a tummy cup. Your cup on the outside must be tahor. They're afraid that once you have a tummy cup, things could get out of hand, so to speak, and tumah could spread where you didn't want it to. Back to your hands, and then you'd be eating with tummy hands, which is forbidden because everyone agrees you have to wash your hands from tumah before you eat bread. Beis Hillel say, using a tummy cup on the outside is not a problem. You're allowed to have a tummy cup. Now, with that machlokas, unspoken here, explicit in the Mishnah, but that's the issue, Beis Shammai saying you may not use a tummy cup on the outside, a cup that's tummy on the outside, and Beis Hillel says, yes, you may. So then, essentially, the chips sort of fall where they may. According to Beis Hillel, since your cup on the outside is already tummy, if you're making kiddush, you fill up your cup, wine falls over the edge, it's going to touch the wine that touches the outside of the cup, which is already tummy as a sheni, will make the wine into a rishon, which will make your hands that touch that wine that's on the outside of the cup, tummy back to a sheni. And if you'd washed your hands prior to making kiddush, so then once you make kiddush, the wine will spill and be matami your hands, and then you'll be eating your meal with tummy hands. And therefore, Beis Hillel will say, first make kiddush, then after you make kiddush, since your hands will become dirty and tummy, wash your hands, and make sure you dry them properly, which is always the halacha when it comes to eating bread, and then you can have dry hands, and then your dry hands touching a dry cup on the outside, the tumah won't spread, because a person can't receive tumah from a shein l'tumah, nor can his hands, and therefore you'll be able to eat b'tahara. So therefore, Beis Hillel are going to say, since your cup is tummy on the outside, potentially, first make kiddush, then wash your hands, and then make a mot and eat your suda. Beis Shammai say, listen, the outside of your cup is always tahor. And that being the case, you should first wash your hands, and then you make kiddush, and after kiddush, you'll make a motzi. What's the worst that could happen? The wine will spill out of your cup when you're making kiddush, but the wine is tahor, the outside of the cup is tahor, and therefore when the wine touches the cup, the wine remains tahor, and if your hands touch the wine, your hands remain tahor. And then when you make hamotzi, you're making hamotzi with tahor hands. Not a problem. So that's straightforward. If you wouldn't wash your hands before kiddush, what would happen is you would have tummy hands before you make kiddush, because hands are always tummy before you wash them. Then when you make kiddush, wine could spill out of the cup and then touch your hands. The wine would then be rendered into a rishon l'tumah midrabanan, because it touched your hands, which were shein l'tumah. And then that would make the outside of your cup into a shein l'tumah. And that's forbidden, says Beis Shammai. You can't use a cup that's a shein l'tumah, and therefore you must wash your hands first before making kiddush. So that's the whole Mishnah outside. Here's the Mishnah inside. It says, again, Perches Mishnah Beis, 8-2. Beishamai Omrim, Notun Li Yadayim. First wash your hands, they're Tahor. Va'achar Kach, Mosgen Esakos. And then you should make Kiddush. Mosgen Esakos literally means pour or mix your cup of wine. Maziga means mixing probably with wine plus water together. But we'll translate it as fill your glass to make Kiddush. And the reason why you have to first wash your hands again is so that when the wine spills out and touches your hand, and that wine then goes back to touch your hand and touch the cup, no tumah will spread because your hands are tahor because you washed them first. Ubeis hil omrim, no, mosgen es hakos. They say your hands are going to be tameh, that's fine. And your cup on the outside is going to be tameh, that's also fine. So when you first make kiddush, mosgen es hakos, you fill up your glass, you make kiddush. So what? The wine will spill out. They'll touch your hands, the outside of the cup will be tamei, big deal, your hands will become tamei, they always were, big deal, no problem. V'achar kach, after kiddush, not only a dime, you go wash your hands, you'll make sure your hands are dry, you'll make sure the outside of the cup is dry, those are, of course, required for separate points, and then you'll have tahor hands to eat your bread, not a problem, and Beis Hillel aren't afraid that after you make kiddush, you're going to go and splash wine a second time out of your cup, and onto your hands, and make your hands tamei, because how often does that happen? The halach, of course, in all these mishnayos, like Beis Hillel, with respect to why some Jews, especially Jews of Ashkenazi, some German Jews, Yekki Jews, do wash their hands before Kiddush, that is beyond the scope of this Mishnah.